There's a way, a way, such a better way. Today, today. Raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way. Ooh, there's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Now raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way.
This is Rod Adams, and it's time for another Atomic Show. And with me today, I have Carmen Beglis from Koki Pharmaceuticals. Those of you who've listened to the Atomic Show before have heard Carmen in the past. Almost exactly a year ago, I talked to Carmen and Koki about their construction project for a molybdenum-99 production facility to be located about 10 miles away from the University of Florida near Gainesville. And so I wanted to invite her back and help us find out what's been going on in the last year. I know there's been some pretty exciting announcements, including release of architectural renderings and some discussions with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. So, Carmen, why don't you tell us, what's been going on since November 2014?
Well, we have been arduously working on the license application for the NRC, and also working on the blueprints, construction documents is what it's called, to evaluate what the, you know, we're dealing also with the contractors to see exactly, you know, procurement of things for the construction, and just all preliminary design of the facility had been done, or what's called schematic design. So that's extremely positive, and it was a lot of hard work and questions and people coming together, and I think Koki basically is all about the human spirit up to a point of trying to do good for humanity and changing, you know, and empowering the people and saying you can do this, and this is your time, and you know, I want you to be dreaming about Koki. And I think all of our engineers have that vision, and they work, you know, they love Koki. It's not just me anymore, you know, it's like everyone's like, okay, Koki, yes, we're part of the team. So it's a great feeling, and it's a great feeling being part of these great people.
Now, you've got some pretty high-quality companies working with you on the project. Can you tell me who your reactor supplier is and your engineering firm here in the U.S.?
Well, our engineering firm, what we call the owner's engineers, is MPR out of Alexandria. Our nuclear engineers is NVAP. Gresham Smith and Partners are the ones that work with all of the architecture and environmental report work as well. And I'm probably missing some people. Well, one of the largest firms but there are attorneys, but they're fantastic because they have such a, you know, the brains on questioning. Do we have, you know, are all the engineers involved? It's Hogan Lovells, you know, they are the best nuclear firm in license perspective as well. But I have to say again, you know, MPR, what a team, what people. It's really, I'm surrounded by great people all the time.
Do you know who M, P, and R were?
Before? No.
Well, M is a guy named Mandel. P is a guy named Panoff. And R is Ted Rockwell. The three of them were all engineers and managers who worked for Admiral Rickover during the building of the USS Nautilus and the construction of the shipping port reactor, the very first commercial reactor in the U.S. And in the early 1960s, they decided that they'd done about as much as they could for Admiral Rickover, and it's time to move on to their own firm. So that's who MP and R are, and they are an enormously qualified engineering firm.
They're fantastic. They are. I'm so honored to be working with them. I have to, you know, I don't know how to express my gratitude to all of them every day.
Well, saying thank you is always good, and I think you just did that.
I do tell them, and you know, Storm Kaufman and Caroline Shelfman, they're fantastic. She's a project manager at NPR for Cokie, and I, you know, I can go down the line. You know, Tom Lovelow and Brian and I actually cannot list or say right now out of the top of my head without having all my documents in front. Every single person that's working, you know, on Cokie, but they are all great.
And I'm glad that you stopped trying to list them all, because if you do, inevitably you're going to leave somebody out, and they're going to have hurt feelings. But they're a good team. I've dealt with some of them over the years and talked to a number of them when I was a member of the Washington, D.C. chapter of the American Nuclear Society. They're pretty active members up there.
And I'm actually, I just wanted to add really quickly, I'm very excited because I'm going to present on November 3rd in front of the National Academy of Sciences, our company. And I'm very honored to have been invited to speak at that venue. So, and it's open to the public as well, so it's really good.
Maybe you can send me some information about that. I've been known to drive up to Washington on a regular basis, so, or irregular basis, I guess. All right, so how is your application process going? In the press release that I have from April, you indicated that it might be ready by the end of 2015. Are you still on track for that?
It's in due course. I want to say that we are into 2016 right now, because of different little things that have occurred, but it is in due course. It hasn't, you know, it's still going, obviously still going. So that's all I can say.
Yeah, I understand.
I don't think it's going to be, you know, all T's crossed, I dotted, perfect for submission by the end of 2015, but I do see it coming together in early 2016 for a beautiful submittal.
Yeah, it's worth taking the time, because anything that's not dotted and crossed will require a request for additional information, and those are always an expensive pain in the neck to work with.
And I want to respect very much the time of the NRC in their review process, and I don't want to give them something that's less than what we are. I always, you know, I teach my daughters that every time they present something, that's important too, for it to be neat and nice, and because it represents who they are. So the same thing is with the application. We submit something that it's not complete, that we're not completing, that we're not answering completely what's being asked from us, then that shows what kind of company Cokie is.
It looks like sounds like you recognize the importance of submitting a high-quality application to the NRC in making sure that the process is as smooth as possible. And also, you know, although the NRC is a very rules-based organization, they're also humans, and they recognize and value high-quality work, and it does make an impression on their judgment of your ability to run your facility down the road. So I applaud you for taking the time and effort to make sure that that application is right.
And they have emphasized this to me before also. The NRC has that, and we reiterated to them, you know, I respect your time. So, yes, we're in line with that thought.
Very good. Now, I've looked at the renderings of your facility. It looks quite beautiful. Now, I want to make a guess that about some of the structures sort of outside of the building, the netting almost, it looks like. That looks kind of familiar to me, having seen the pictures of the Australian Opal reactor. Is that have something to do with making sure that aircraft don't fly into the building?
Well, it has to do, obviously, we do have that protection going on, but the reason it was actually done is because of Cokie and of the tropical climate in Puerto Rico. So what they did is that our architects took pictures or had pictures from inside of the rainforest looking out. So when you see that, you see the sky in between shades and shadows. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to bring, you know, how do we make a nuclear plant look, how do I say it, human, in the sense of how do we make it look to blend in more with nature and make it friendly looking, because we're also healing lives, because we're producing radioisotopes for the people, mm-hmm. you know, to service a need. So how do we take something and make it more natural looking, more, you know, better for, just more friendly also for the neighbors. So that's what it was. So it does have also the purpose, but let me go back for a second, because that's the administration building, what you're saying.
Okay.
The protection for that will be over the reactor halls, and that you'll never see in a rendering.
Okay. Yes.
Until it's built afterwards and then. But right now we don't show them. What you see there is the administration building, and it was actually done to mimic the nature.
Okay.
More than.
So when you're inside the building and looking up, it's more like being in the shade.
Right. So when you're, I think there is, I'm not sure if you have it, and I, you know, I can have it sent to you, but there's also a rendering of like from within a conference room, mm-hmm. and then you see that nature. And since it's surrounded the site by trees, it's, you know, it's quite, as I envision it built already, I think it's quite beautiful.
Yeah, it sounds like you are paying attention to the aesthetics, which is something that the conventional nuclear power industry has sadly not taken much into account in most of their facilities. I mean, some nuclear plants are actually quite attractive considering their industrial facilities, but... In many cases, utility companies have said, well, if I can save an extra dollar on paint or that, I'll just use bare concrete.
Well, but actually, it has nothing to do with much more cost. I've lowered a lot of the cost working, since we're working, you know, with the contractors and the builders ahead to make sure that we stay in budget. Everything that we've design-wise is we're trying to maintain cost to as low as possible. So we're just taking different materials, but it's not because it's more expensive. It's just thinking outside the box, I would say. You know, going more to the people work here, people live here, people see this. This has to be pleasant to the eye, and we have to. It's the same thing. If we're producing this and we're doing this to be a service to people, we also have to service the people that are working there and give them, you know, a good place to work. And a good place that they feel proud of coming, of, you know, arriving in the morning and saying, oh, I work here. And they can tell the kids, oh, look, this is where mommy or daddy work, you know, and it's a beautiful place, but it's not more expensive.
Well, I really wasn't
thinking, yeah. just having people think.
No, that's exactly yeah. right. I'm not a believer that aesthetics is more expensive. I'm just was trying to point out that utility companies run by, traditional engineers think it's more expensive, and they prefer to spend their time doing other things rather than thinking about how to make things more attractive.
At this point, our call dropped, so I had to take a little time to get restored. You may notice a little discombobulation, but the show goes on.
You are spending some time and effort making sure that your facility is warm and welcoming to your employees, making sure that they're going to be happy to be working there. That sounds like a wonderful
Correct.
Way to run a company.
Yep. I think it's very important. You know, architecture exists because it's they design spaces for the for us humans to live in. So the engineers and architects design these beautiful spaces for our senses. And if I want my employees to be doing the best that they can in order to be, to have empathy for the end product, even though it's, people think, oh, it's just, you know, producing molybdenum, and which then, you know, will be technetium, and, well, we're producing something that saves lives. So everybody has to understand that they are putting that grain into doing that. You know, that they're helping to do that. And at the same time, if they see that somebody else is caring about them, it helps them do even a better job. And I've seen that happen so many times. Again, just, you know, if you take a look at the people I work with, Cookie, and how far we have come and everything that we've done, it's the same type of thing. It's very personal. We're all human beings. We will all probably need the technetium someday. And many of our loved ones will suffer from an ailment that needs it. So,
you accepting applications?
Yes.
Not that I'm looking for a job. I kind of enjoy where I am right now. But that sounds like a great place to work. And I was just kind of,
it will be.
You know, saying, "Wow, I've had a few bosses like that over the years, but mainly not." Okay. So. Let me think. I've kind of, we had a little bit of a technical difficulty for the audience, so that's why I'm a little bit discombobulated. So how many employees does Cookie have right now?
We still have contracted. Until we are licensed, we have outside contractors.
Okay. Very good.
Right now.
And
so
and your administration building, it looks like it's sized to have a pretty decent sized workforce. How many people will be employed administering and running your facilities once you get?
Approximately 250.
Oh, pretty good.
Employees.
Okay. And the description that you have of the building and architecture sounds like you've spent some time in making it environmentally sound, spending some time in the LEED type construction work, energy efficiency, that kind of stuff. Can you describe a little bit about that?
Well, yes, I can. One of the things that we've done is make sure that everything that can be, there's the one part that being that we have to comply with securities and things that are in place and what's accepted and materials that are used to code. So to make sure that we are under the quality construction parameters that we need to be for NRC and just overall for the handling of the materials, et cetera. So we have done everything so far in the schematic designs that can be done in the sense of, you know, utilizing the light, for the natural light, the more that we can, especially in the administration building, I would say, and using natural materials inside, just even the lighting to make sure that we have the best, the most, I forget the bulbs, you know, and the electrical, environmental sensitive ones. So it's, that has been taken into consideration, and it is as everything that we can be, that can be used will be, and everything also goes into, sometimes they say that, oh, we use these are more expensive at the beginning, but then we take out what's the cost life of utilizing one material versus the other. And that's also taken into consideration. So as you can see, I go from everything that has to do from uranium lease and take-back programs to what kind of lighting will be inside of the building.
Now, traditionally, the reactor up in Canada that supplies molybdenum-99 and technetium uses highly enriched uranium targets. I presume that your facility doesn't.
No, everything in our facility is low enrich, LU, the target and the reactor.
Okay. Your reactors, do they have any heat generation that is an offshoot of the production?
We do. We do have heat generation, but it's very low, so we're not using it. We cannot. We've discussed this. And so far, we have not been able to reuse our production as part of the energy consumption of the facility. If that, I'm assuming that's where the question is.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am. I'm always interested because over the years, the rules have evolved to the point where it sometimes is hard to understand on a logical basis. For example, why a nuclear power plant is so dependent upon the grid reliability to provide electricity to the power plant. I mean, it's generating electricity. Why? Sure. And so then that's, and I know that the fission process, of course, releases heat. So I don't know how much heat you all are producing.
No. So it's complicated because we've gone back and forth with this. It's different things. One is the regulators and what they allow us to do. Okay. One is the cost of how do you reconfigure that, and the other way is it's almost as if it was a project on its own. I was able to explain it because I have to reconfigure how the power would be generated. The ours does not generate enough to sustain the facility, but if I'm thinking of a power, a generator, and it would be so logical for them to reuse their electricity, but I think I would have to, go get the best engineers in the world on that part.
Yeah, I understand. It is. The amount of heat that you're talking about as a byproduct is probably more expensive to recover than it is to simply discharge it to the environment.
But I still think it's very important. I think something that's extremely important that should be, that we should try to see how it could be implemented. And we have been figuring out how it is, but it's like, I always say that that out of every project come little projects that you tell the engineers and you say, well, what about this? And, how do you do this? Like even the vitrification of the waste and how, I'm always saying like we have to figure out a way in which we can recycle all this waste and do something productive and, not just store it and let it just keep on decaying. So there's, there's always stuff that we need to try to do to make things better.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in reusing and recycling materials, particularly in a country where people are encouraged to save old newspapers for recycling. It's always boggled my mind that we put away and let decay some extremely valuable substances that have rare, unique properties that could be used beneficially. But the evolution of the rules is a topic that's way beyond the scope of this discussion. So it's something I've been checking for a long time.
Rules
I really want to get a nuclear industry to have the same philosophy that the meat packers in Chicago had at one time, which was figure out a way to use everything but the squeal.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. But so far, my efforts have fallen on deaf ears, but I'll keep trying. All right, so your company is actually incorporated in Puerto Rico.
Correct.
And is there any particular advantages or reason you did that other than?
No. It was just that I started in Puerto Rico, and I thought we would eventually – I thought it was going to be able to be built in Puerto Rico – because I was there, I had my first clinic, oncology clinic over there. So I was like, oh, okay, let's do it in Puerto Rico. And that's why it's Coqui Radio Pharmaceuticals. But then I realized that as I was learning a little bit more about the seismic, Puerto Rico shakes every day. And you shouldn't, a facility like this in the island if it's shaking every day.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the things. The other thing is that's when we started to look outside, actually, of Puerto Rico.
And
then came here to Florida.
I looked at the brief that you gave to the NRC back in March of this year, and it talked about some of the strong advantages that you have at the site that you picked with regard to some existing infrastructure, some existing capabilities. Can you talk a little bit about some of those?
Well, being part and associated with the University of Florida is fantastic, and that's and their nuclear program in the school is it's great being part of that and what's going on there. Also, there's new companies arising and coming to the Florida Corporate Park there, the University of Florida Corporate Park, and just being part of what's going on there it's fantastic. They're always creating new things as well. So that creativity and that think outside the box and keep pushing, keep alive, keep that type of mentality of just creativity is fantastic. And, you know, we can get also, you know, that infrastructure of workforce that we need from the university as well.
You mean that the University of Florida does more than play football?
Yeah, believe it or not. There's smart Gators in there.
I have a soft spot in my heart for the Gators because both my mom and dad went to University of Florida and so did my younger brother. So
okay.
There's a lot more there than football.
Yeah. And there's Santa Fe College very close by as well. And they also have a technical engineering nuclear program. And there's some power plants nearby. And I'm always getting emails of, when are you hiring? When can we go? When can we get trained? So it's a great place to be.
Yeah, I'm sure that there's some people that used to work at the Crystal River facility that would have been happy to have come to work for you, but unfortunately, the timing is not quite right. They got shut down a couple of years ago. So.
But they're still around. Because I get emails.
Yeah, that's true. And they still like living in Florida, which is, another thing.
Definitely.
So, all right. So you guys are moving along rather nicely. What kind of major milestones do you see coming up soon?
Well, the biggest of them all is the submittal. I can't wait to be submitting that license to the NRC. I'm going to plan a big party that day.
Can I get an invitation?
For us. Of course. And I'm not kidding. I think, we really want to make it this big celebration because it's been definitely a work of love.
And it's been a long time since the NRC has received an application for a small reactor that produces such valuable materials.
Yeah, they've been getting different crazy stuff. I shouldn't say that.
That your reactor is not something... new, right? It's not a new design. Where does it come from?
No, InVAP, but since it's a dedicated reactor design, it's different. It's not a multi-purpose reactor. It's extremely exciting because it's streamlined for the production of the radioisotopes. And yep.
So it's similar, but not the same as the OPAL reactor in Australia.
No. The OPAL reactor is a multi-purpose reactor, and it has more wattage than ours. Mm-hmm. And, ours is just smaller. Like I said, dedicated for the radioisotopes, streamlined for the production. So
a lot of the
so it's boring, but exciting.
Well, so a lot of the extra equipment that you would need for the other purposes doesn't need to be installed.
Exactly.
Okay. Understand. And what will you be doing with the byproduct materials under your current plans?
Well, one of the biggest byproducts obviously is iodine-131, and we plan to sell it.
Well,
I'm planning to sell that.
Well, good. Good. Selling is a good thing. But, of course, and I assume you don't have any concerns about reliable supplies of the materials that you'll need.
No. I feel very confident in what we've designed and how it's structured.
Well, good. I'm excited. I'm glad to hear that you all are moving forward. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we say until your submittal? I'll let you go back to work and get that going.
Yes, one last thing. So I have the November 3rd meeting at the National Academy of Sciences, and then I've been asked to be plenary speaker of the Nuclear Medicine Radiation Oncology Therapy, I think it's what it's called, meeting in Cologne, Germany next year. So I'm the plenary speaker, and I'm very honored to have been asked to be part, to be that, basically in that meeting. So I will be there.
Terrific.
Speaking about Kochi Nuclear Medicine and Radiation Oncology.
Okay, and your website is KochiPharmaceuticals.com, is that correct?
KochiPharma.
Kochi Pharma. KochiPharma. That's it. That's it. I think it's just found it. Okay, good. Well, thank you for your time this morning, Carmen, and congratulations on the progress, and keep up the good work, and say hi to my friends at NPR.
I definitely will. Thank you, Rod, so much. I appreciate you so much.
Take care.
Thank you.
Isn't it exciting to hear a young voice ready and willing to attack some of the world's toughest problems? I'm a big fan. I hope that Carmen and Kochi continue on their successful way. They've got some good help, and looks like we will have a source of molybdenum-99 for the foreseeable future in the United States. Bye.
There's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way. Ooh, there's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Now raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. The way is the Adam's way.